Check session number 3866 reel 3.
Mr. Peroni, Reel 3. What was your feeling in being at war with another fascist country? Against another fascist
country? My personal feelings that it was a terrible thing. I personally thought it was a terrible thing that we should declare war in 1939, because as I always felt that one should defend oneself at all times, but one shouldn't attack. And I think then, in fact, my personal opinion was that the declaration of war, given the known state of preparation of the armed forces in 1939, was really a criminal act which could have lost this country its very being. It was a terrible thing, because if you want to conclude a treaty whereby you can make a declaration of war on another country, the least one can do for one's own people is to make sure you've made adequate preparations. And I think history now has decided that the preparations weren't adequate, and therefore my opinion at the time is, my opinion still, that it was an act of criminal folly for this country to declare war under those circumstances. So, but having war forced on us, the only thing one could do, so long as you could talk and support an idea, it was to press for a negotiated peace. And of course, it just wasn't a possibility at the time. But even if it wasn't a possibility, it was something that certain people regarded it as right to press for.
Did the arrest of Mosley suggest that others of you would be arrested as well, or did you see him as a figurehead arrest and that you would not be affected?
Oh yes, I'm certainly that. Certainly I myself and my wife never dreamt that we would ever be arrested at all. It never occurred to us that we thought, well, you know, they would arrest the people at headquarters and that would be the end of the movement. And this is war and things are happening rapidly every day. And that was it. And because there was no headquarters, there was no figurehead at the head of the political party, there was nothing that could be done, just except to go about your everyday business. The ideas that we stood for were silenced by the arrest of Mosley. So I think in those days, you see, I was a porter, my wife was a typist. We regarded ourselves as very small fry, that the thought that we would be Churchill's prisoner was never entered our head for a moment. And even after Moses' arrest, we didn't think that we could be arrested, because all that we had done was what a person in the Conservative Party or the Liberal Party or the Labour Party had done. And that's to advocate the ideas that they had believed in. And we had grown up in a society where we were told all the time that it was a terrible thing to arrest a person and put them inside a prison for their political ideas. It never occurred to us for one moment that we would be the recipients. But on the other hand, we were young. But even if we hadn't been young, I think we would still have felt there was no reason for our arrest, no justification at all. And that was it. We just didn't anticipate it would happen.
So how did it happen?
Well, the first intimation we got that we were of interest, on the 13th of June 1940, my wife celebrated her 21st birthday. She had been serving in the WAFs in the Phoney War period, 1939, early 1940. She came out of the WAFs because she was so bored with nothing to do. There were no air attacks on Britain, as had been predicted. There was no reaction. They had more people taken into the forces than they could deal with, really, because there was nothing, no action. That was the Phoney War period. So she left the WAFs and came back into civilian life, got a job down at Cameron Town with the contractors, who are still there today, and we went out to celebrate her birthday. The following morning, our dear old landlady, who was about 84, told me with great distress that a number of men had burst in the previous evening while we were out, raced up the stairs and banged on the doors, and because they were all locked and there was nobody there, they all went away again. But she said, "They were very rough men, Mr. Peroni, very rough men." And I suspected, in fact, that they were police. And then the following day, a special branch man who was in plain clothes came round to Gilling Court, Homefield Court in Belsize Park, Belsize Grove, where I was working, where I'd been for the past 7 years. And took a statement down from me. This statement became very important later on, because at the end of it I was asked to sign it, and subsequently to my arrest that was doctored, and the doctored part was read out to me at my tribunal in late 1940, and that doctored part said, "I am pro-German and proud of it," which was a complete piece of nonsense, and it was readily recognised by me as something that I could not have said. Anyway, this statement was taken down, and then they went away, and then nothing happened, and we thought, well, this is a consequence of Mosley being arrested, and it's a warning that you're being watched for some reason or another, and if you go about your everyday business, nothing's going to happen to you because you've done nothing to deserve anything happening to you. That was my reaction. And then on the 3rd of July 1940, if I recollect rightly, it was the day the French fleet were attacked in Dakar. I have a memory of that, round about that time anyway. And it was a Wednesday, I'd started at 9 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly this chap who I subsequently knew to be Inspector Ward and became very friendly with him after the war, as a matter of fact. Inspector Ward of the Special Branch casually came in smoking a pipe. He laid a piece of paper down and said, "Sorry," he said, "I've got to arrest you." So I was in my porter's uniform, and I said, "Well, I'll just have to go downstairs and change." So he said, "Well, all right," he said. I said, "Perhaps I'd better phone my wife and tell her I've been arrested." "Oh," he said, "you don't have to worry about that. We're going to arrest her as well." So that was quite a shock. Anyway, I got changed. We got into the car. we went down to my wife's place of work in Camden Town. I went in and told her that she was going to be arrested. And she came out with me, and we told her employers and got into the car. And we drove back to Gayton Road, Hampstead, where we had two rooms, our first home in our married life. And we were married on August the 6th, 1939, exactly 4 weeks prior to war breaking out. So we had been married a very short time. And when the car turned into Gayton Road, there was another plainclothes man draped against the lamppost on the other side of the road, watching our home, obviously to make sure that nobody visited it while we were being in the process of being arrested. We all went in then and went into the flat. Our possessions were turned over, and a lockbox I had was opened, and there was a general scrimmage around, but nothing being found, because in two small rooms there's not much room to keep anything at all.
What were they looking for?
I think that they were probably looking for something which would have shown that we were indulging in some activity which could have been deemed illegal. One can only speculate on that, you know. This is the question which only the special branch could answer. What were you looking for when you turned over the possessions of the people you had arrested anyway?
Did you have the account books at your home of the local branch?
No. I had those. I kept those at Gilling Court, where we worked, in fact, because we used to have in the basement an enormous array of luggage owned by the people who lived in the flats, their baggage room. And I used to keep these records in a little attache case in this, because it's very convenient. You see, I could leave the work and go straight to the place, and I was in business right away. So they were there. I had told a friend of mine, actually, one of the porters in the other block was a member of British Union as well. And I said to him, we were visited last month by the special branch. Here is this box with the records of the branch. If I'm arrested, if I should be arrested, after this visit, I thought, well, there at least there might be a remote chance. But I said to this chap, if I should ever be arrested, throw it into the furnace, which is in the block of flats. Because in any case, they were virtually valueless at that time because the collapse of the movement, you see.
Did he do that for you?
Oh, he did. Yes, he did. When I came out after being detained, I asked him, amongst many other things, of course, and he told me he'd thrown it into the furnace. It may well be, of course, that the special branch would have liked to have had those records, but I would have thought that because the branch reported to the headquarters every person who had joined, and in fact had to pay a capitation fee on the person who had joined, those records were at the headquarters anyway, and it was known, publicly known, that those records had been taken when Moseley was arrested on the 23rd of May, so that it would only have been a duplication of information, and it wouldn't have been of any value. But of course in those times, when people were seeing all sorts of alarms and excursions in every part, they may have regarded everybody on a card well worthwhile looking up. And possibly there could have been a reason, you know, a reasonable case for that. But subsequently, events showed that it was very much a scare. The arrest of people of British Union was an unnecessary act.
Were you arrested because you were treasurer?
Oh, yes, I think so, yes. It would appear that the bulk of the people who were subsequently detained under 18B as members of the, were in fact officials of one description or another. And my district leader, he was arrested after I was arrested, actually. And I remember they rather acted as bully boys at the time of the arrest. They said, "Well, who's your district leader?" I said, "Well, I'd rather not say." He said, "Well, you come along to the station with us, you know, we'll soon make you tell us." So I said, "All right, well, his name's William Wright, you see, he lives in Belsize Park." So they went along and arrested him, but not immediately. There seemed to be, they knew who he was, and they probably tapped his telephone and did all sorts of other sort of things, and then when it suited them, they arrested him. Because he suddenly turned up inside camp.
Yeah. On this day in July, when you were arrested, was this the occasion on which they found your map of Manston Aerodrome?
Yes, that was the occasion. When they opened that little box that was locked, in that was a little piece of tracing paper, which... No, there must have been a previous visit, now I come to think of it, because I can recollect going down with one of the plainclothes men. I can remember going down to the Central Library in Arkwright Road, Hampstead, to have a look at the atlases there, because my recollection was I had traced this from a map at the Public Library, and it had Manston Aerodrome on it. But I must have done this some years ago, because I know I'd had that little piece of tracing paper with Kent and Manston Aerodrome on it. But the fact that my wife had been inside the WAFs, and I had what could have been probably, or subsequently was, a key aerodrome in Kent up against the Channel, would think that this was sufficient evidence. But I was never charged in any sort of way. At all. I think I still have in my possession here the actual copy signed by Sir John Anderson for my arrest. And I remember that there was a piece of paper with it which said one of the offences which I had was to chalk up on a wall, "Stand by the King." That was actually mentioned in this. Which is very, very ridiculous, of course.
Why did you have the map of Kent?
I had this because I'd had it some years, because I was, as I said earlier, I was very interested in anything to do with the air. And as a young lad, I used to go down quite a lot to Margate. I'd been out to see Manston Aerodrome, and I remember been taken up for a 5 shilling 2 minute flight by Sir Alan Cobham when he used to run the Alan Cobham Flying Circus, and they used to they came down there for a short period, about a couple of days, take people up for once round the field for 5 shillings, and it was a two-seater. And that was the sort of thing, you see, it was entirely natural for me. If I went to an area on holiday, if there was an aerodrome where I could see an aeroplane, this is great stuff for me as a boy of 14, 15, 16. Oh, yes. And so if I'd taken the trouble to trace that and identified the aerodrome on it, it was a natural thing to put it in a box and keep it. You know, affectionate regard for that. So there was nothing untoward about that. There was no mystery at all. And I'm sure they were absolutely satisfied there was no mystery. But they were looking for anything in those days to justify the act, I think. Not really that they needed, because the law was such that they didn't have to give any reasons, you know. It was part of the emergency legislation, so...
When had it been that you said you expected Mussolini to enter the war?
Well, that must have been I should think, prior to my wife's birthday. It must have been sometime in June 1940, when France had been overrun, and there was general expectation in the press, I think, that Mussolini would declare war, because if he saw that the entire Belgium, Holland, Norway, Denmark, France had gone down, I think it was a reasonable expectation to think, well, one jump across the channel and England goes too. And so therefore that was the justification for him to come in to the war, and I'm sure a study of the newspapers at the time would show that my general expectation that Mussolini would come into the war was no more than what the average person reading the papers would deduce. But it so happened, of course, that I was stopped by an inspector of police attached to Hampstead, and we had a casual conversation, a friendly conversation, and it was during the course of this conversation that I expressed these views to him. And of course, everything that I was saying and doing was obviously being taken down and put into an enormous collection of papers, typed papers, which subsequently landed with a thud on the desks of the tribunal that were going to interrogate me. So I suppose the inspector thought, well, here's a chap, he's got an Italian name, he's predicting that Mussolini will come into the war, and a few days after as Mussolini comes into the war, he must have some inside knowledge, you know, he must have a private line to Rome or some bit of nonsense. And I suppose this was all written up in the most serious way. I'd love to see what notes were made on me at the time. I must have been a hell of a fella. Oh dear.
What were you permitted to take with you when you were arrested?
I just think of washing things. Pajamas, just the sort of things that you'd stay for an overnight stay. Just for an overnight stay. And I had 16 shillings in my jacket, my possessions. And of course, when we had come away from the house, we were taken first of all to Holloway to put my wife in Holloway, and then I was put into a Black Maria then and driven across London to Brixton Prison. And I could remember looking out through the little window at the back of the Black Maria, and suddenly seeing somebody who I recognised crossing Trafalgar Square, and just an instant flash of a person you recognise. Quite extraordinary thing that, you know, just that. And of course, the window, the Black Maria, is so small that it just had to be an instant flash recognition of someone you know. And then, of course, we went to down to Brixton, and then there was a terrible waiting around period while they got to grips with dealing with you. And there was a feeling, to a certain extent, oh, this is an adventure. This is something really out of the ordinary. Here's a chap, a porter in a block of flats, leading a very mundane life, basically. Income low, little ability to lead a more exciting life by spending, because you didn't have any money to spend. Suddenly, thrust into jail, put into a cell, left there for a long time, suddenly hear the next cell to you, somebody else comes in, and then you shout out, are you 18B? And the chap says, yes. He says, you BU? Yes, I'm BU. Where'd you come from? Oh, I come from Shropshire. Where'd you come from? Oh, I come from Hampstead. And of course there's a feeling, oh, well, at least I got a friend. I don't know what he looks like, but there's a friend in the next cell. And then, of course, we went into another sort of central place where we eventually came out of these cells and congregated together for another long waiting period. It seemed to be one long session of waiting until around about, well, it must have been 10 or 11 o'clock at night, I should think. He got put into the cells with a bed in where he could at least lay down. And I was put into B Wing at Brixton Prison. That was the wing where the detainees were kept. And nobody asked me there about my health. So I wasn't put into the hospital there. It wasn't until I got up to Hyten Jail that anybody took the trouble to ask me about my health. And when I said, oh yes, I've had epilepsy, I said, oh yeah, right, you're for the hospital. But I didn't go into the hospital there. And then we started on the round of sort of porridge and bread and a pint of tea in the morning after slop out, where you take your chamber pot with your urine along to the landing stage and throw it down this slop out area. Very delicate, civilized operation that is, of course. And then back to your cell, and then you were taken out. I forget the actual times, but then you had an exercise in the morning. And we got far more exercise in the first few weeks of Brixton than we ever did up at Hyten Jail at Liverpool. Walton Jail, rather, Liverpool. One of the things that Moseley used to play with a select group of friends there was medicine ball, which was not in my, you know, anybody throw a medicine ball at me and I was landed on my back. So that wasn't my idea of spending a gentle walk round and talk was more in my nature. Anyway, he used to be there with Captain Ramsay, a Tory MP, who was arrested. And they were two very tall figures and obviously dominated the exercise yard. They used to exercise separately from the main group of detainees. I think there was a feeling that if Moseley was allowed to get together with his supporters, holes would start appearing in the walls or some sort of thing. But there was nothing like that at all. And this fell into a certain routine. My mother came to visit me. She brought me a pot of ink so that I could write a letter home to her, forgetting, of course, that you were allowed a couple of letters a month and you had a pen to write with there anyway. And she was very upset. I think she went away crying.